Howdy, folks. Welcome to Systems, Symbiosis, and the Forest Goddess. My name is Jim Cranford. In episode 2, we closed with the concept of the microbial mat acting as the brain and central nervous system for the forest. If you are waiting for science or religion to verify this, it just won't happen. It doesn't matter if you were raised in a religious or a scientific background, everything you've been taught has been spun to get you to behave in a certain way. You have been lied to. For example, we've been brainwashed into believing that we are separate from nature. We have been convinced that we must fight against nature in order to survive, and therefore it is right and proper to rip apart our environment for profit. We have been conned into believing that human beings are special. Either we are the descendants of gods or the pinnacle of evolutionary progress. These fundamental beliefs translate into a screwed set of values and priorities. The result of applying these values is the mess we find ourselves in today. Both science and religion want you to believe their philosophy. They want you to think they have all the answers between them, and they offer the only options. Are science and religion really at opposite ends of the spectrum, encompassing all between them? Well, we all know the history. We just need to put it into perspective. In the olden days, all we had was religion for a philosophy. All the institutions of learning were owned and operated by the church. Then along came science. It didn't grow out of the ground or appear fully formed out of the blue. It branched out of those religious institutions. Consequently, science inherited some of the same negative patterns that define religion, like domination over nature and the enslavement of the working class. That also has meant that religion financed and controlled all scientific research through its ownership of all institutions of higher learning. Not much has changed today. Religious orders still own and operate the major universities. The battle between religion and science is staged. Does MIT have a chapel? Does Caltech? Does Notre Dame have a science department? Does Harvard give out Doctor of Divinity degrees? In reality, religion owns science, lock, stock, and barrel. Religion and science keep up this mock battle for our beliefs to keep us from noticing that it is nature that really runs the whole show. They want to keep us gobbling up the environment while we're lining their pockets. After a while, you may begin to notice that these lies all work together to extract certain behavior from us. These aren't lies of misunderstanding. On the contrary, taken as a set of protocols, the lies fed us over the centuries show a coherence only possible with a deep understanding of human nature. Civilization demonstrates a degree of organization, coordination, consistency, and yes, understanding, not likely to be carried off by human beings, at least not the ones that I know. Awakening is not a one-time deal. It's a lifestyle. It's like the levels in a video game, or the corporate ladder, or boiling water, for that matter. When you step up a level, the rules change. One of my favorite examples is professional sports leagues. Doesn't matter what sport, if it has a pro league, you can be sure it fits this pattern. And we'll start at the bottom. Kids learn to play the game. They learn the basics of the sport. As the levels get higher, the learning becomes more complex, but still is directly related to the performance in the game. The kid grows up, turns pro. Lots of things change at this level. There are contracts and money added to the mix. So now the kid knows the game backwards and forwards and moves up to being a coach. At this level, the rules change again, new responsibilities and challenges. From the coach, he moves up to GM, a whole new ball game. Everything learned in the past is important, but the new rules change everything. Somewhere near this pinnacle of success, our sports hero will find out that all the sport, with all its rules and competition, is really a front for a system with an entirely different rule set. This invisible set of rules trumps all the others. This rule set has been in place from the very beginning of the sport. This rule set is the reason the sport was organized in the first place. Of course, this shadow benefactor from all sports is gambling. Civilization has a similar shadow rule set that trumps all others. It is the reason for the existence of civilization itself. We are like those children first learning how to play the game. We are so wrapped up in playing that we have no idea what our efforts lead to down the road. I used to think it was just pride that held science back, that scientists just didn't want to admit that the shamans and witch doctors were right all along. Well, then I was sure it was just greed, the hunger for wealth and power that made human beings act so crazy. There is no doubt that pride and greed have and continue to play their parts. However, the deeper I explored this natural communication system, not just as an observer, but as a participant, learning from the experience, the more I began to sense that there is something much deeper going on here. Our civilized madness is not an end in itself. Our seeming separation from nature is an illusion. Our cities are no less natural artifacts than bird nests or termite mounds. There is a grand plan going on, and we are part of it. The plan comes from high above our pay grade and security clearance. We are a strategy signed off on by Mother Nature herself. We are in sort of a need-to-know phase. The plan expects most people to continue to be deceived. Complete awakening would just be too painful for most folks to handle. I think it was Gloria Steinem who said, "The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off." I think it's worse than that. What will really piss you off is when you find out that the truth is, there is no freedom. Like it or not, we serve a higher order through our web of symbiotic relationships. We tend to look at symbiotic relationships like the communication channels in that we are amazed to find them in the first place. "Look how unusual it is to find this kind of behavior in a deaf and dumb universe," we say. Imagine such diverse species cooperating and communicating. How did they learn to do that? However, this kind of behavior is not unusual at all. In reality, communication and symbiotic relationships are the glue that holds the natural systems together. Most species depend on dozens of direct symbiotic relationships and many, many more indirect relationships for their survival. Okay, back to the forest system. The forest provides a steady flow of nutrients to the mobile species through a multitude of feeding stations. Fruit and nectar are certainly nutritious, but they also carry a bunch of information in hormones, allomones, pheromones, flavors, and other enticements. Within the output of each feeding station are messages that encourage the guest to return often, as well as information on the duties expected by the plant. This is where we get into trouble with our plant relationships. We expect a one-sided relationship. The opium poppy is an extreme example of a plant encouraging its users to return often. The folks who live in the mountains where opium is grown have little trouble with their relationship because they can perform the second half of the deal they have made with the plant. Their duty is to grow and harvest the opium poppy. The big city addict gets the first part of the deal but has no way to fulfill the rest of the bargain and suffers serious internal conflict as a result. In a way, then, primates in the forest are addicted to the food they eat. Their behavior centers around the feeding stations and, of course, their bodily functions. What do you suppose these primates dream about at night? Visions of sugar plums? Another way to look at it is that primates serve, or maybe they are slaves, to the forest. This is how it was for our ancestors in the Garden of Eden. Our ancestors were fully immersed in the forest system, taking in and processing energy and information from our symbiotic partners and depositing our output on the forest floor. Along with our feces, hair, sweat, skin, dead bodies, were absorbed into the soil and recycled back into the system. Well, I don't usually recommend books, but I suggest you check out Tony Wright's book, Left in the Dark. It's a really good description of the hormone-rich forest diet and how it stimulated the growth of our brain, and also how our savanna diet led to the shrinking and malfunctioning of our brain. So here we are, our ancestors anyway, hanging out in the forest, digging the ripe fruits and tender leaves of paradise, growing bigger brains, and what happens? The bottom falls out. Forests are shrinking, food's getting scarce, and some adjustments need to be made. Well, this story is not so much about human beings as it is the forest, so we're going to widen our view. Besides, the forest system was aware of the situation long before any humans would have noticed. This pattern was in place in the mature forest long before it began to shrink. In a mature forest, energy is already in short supply. The huge biomass generated by a mature forest uses up most of the available nutrients. So there is a forest-wide strategy already underway to find ways to import energy. It was and is really a simple plan. She just programs mobile species to go out, find food, and bring it home. One of the first to do this was the birds. They were set out to gather energy and bring it back. Some birds would eat seeds and grains and just bring back bird shit, while others would bring home food for their young, nesting in the forest. In those days, there were a lot of birds, which amounted to a sizable daily import of energy into the local forest system. This is a very simple behavior pattern, and we can see it throughout nature. Go out, find food, bring it home. From ants cutting their leaves, eagles catching fish, to Papa bringing home the bacon, this behavior pattern drives a good portion of world systems. From the forest point of view, primates were perfect for this kind of mission. They couldn't cover as much ground as birds, but they could carry bigger loads. We have certainly taken to the procedure of go out, find food, bring it home to eat. It is my contention that it was the forest goddess that first sent our ancestors out onto the savanna. For a clue as to how this might have happened, we can look at the leafcutter ants. They have prospered using that part of this process, going out, finding food, bringing it home. For the fungus, of course. It shouldn't be any stretch to figure out how this symbiotic relationship developed. The fungus was once attached to the root of a tree in the forest, furnishing its moisture, nutrition, and antibodies. That's what its current relatives do. What probably happened is that host trees died, leaving the fungus without a symbiotic partner. There were ants nearby, and a new partnership was forged. In this new symbiotic relationship, the fungus no longer counted on a specific tree, but with the help of the ants could forage a variety of plants. Like I said, this relationship has been highly successful for millions of years. Our ancestors entered into a very similar relationship with the fungus, and that's going to be the subject of our next episode. This is really the key episode coming up, so I hope you'll be around for it. In closing, I'd like to read you a little bit from a book titled Moles and Man, An Introduction to the Fungi by Christensen, University of Minnesota Press, 1963. Give you something to think about till next time. When the young queen from one of these nests goes out to found a new colony, she has in her furbuncle pouch the fungus on which the colony has lived for millions of years. After being fertilized, she seeks out a likely spot, grubs out a small chamber, and casts her wad of fungus out on the floor. As soon as the mold begins to grow from this pellet, she lays an egg or two, crushes these, and mixes them with the growing fungus. She also mixes her excrement with the compost. This is not done just casually or by chance, but deliberately and by intent. Now, you don't suppose that that queen ant is sacrificing her firstborn to show her faith. Where have I heard that before? Well, that's all for today. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope to see you again next time.